Hey everybody, elections are coming up for the KBOO Board of Directors. Right now we're looking for board candidates with skills in finance, new media, and nonprofit development. So if this sounds like you or someone you know, you can download a copy of the board candidate package at kboo.fm or pick up a copy at the station during business hours. We're at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The application deadline is midnight, June 30th, so don't delay. And thank you for supporting Community Radio, KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Portland premiere of the documentary The Bird Who Flew Alone, The Triumphs and Tragedy of Gene Clark, Monday, June 23rd at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. This documentary explores the life and work of Gene Clark, singer-songwriter with the Byrds. It's been made with the support and involvement of Gene's family, as well as a whole host of friends and fellow musicians, not least the three surviving original Byrds, David Crosby, Chris Hillman, and Roger McGinn. Again, that's Monday, June 23rd at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a new forest fire has broken out near Hood River. Unemployment is up slightly, according to a new state jobs report. And we get a response from Native American activists on today's decision to cancel the trademarks of the Washington Redskins football team. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, June 18th, 2014. I'm Brian Pritchett. The U.S. Patent Office in Washington announced today that they are canceling the trademark of the Washington Redskins. This means that the football team based in Washington, D.C. will no longer be able to use that name. The Patent Office stated that the name is offensive and derogatory to Native Americans. For more on this story, KBOO's Jenga Soderberg spoke with Jackie Keller of the locally based group Eradicating Offensive Native Mascotry.
Could you give us your thoughts on today's announcement that the trademark for the Redskins team name would be canceled?
Well, we're really excited. I think that we've been waiting for this for a long time. These trademark lawsuits have been going on for 22 years now, since the first one was filed in 1992. And I didn't actually expect them to come to a decision this soon. And we knew that after the trademark ruling in March, where they denied a potato the trademark to be called Redskins because it was too derogatory, that when it came up again, that we had a good chance. We just didn't know when it would happen. So we're very excited.
How do you and your group, Eradicating Offensive Native Mascotry, find this particular team name and logo offensive?
The name itself is, as people often say, is a dictionary-defined slur. I mean, it has a pretty horrible history. In the 19th century, the U.S. government actually paid people for the scalps of Native people, women, children, everyone. And they actually had a pay scale for each bloody scalp. And the bloody scalp was called a red skin. And so... This is a pretty horrific history, and to say that somehow it's okay now, and And I think for a lot of Native people, when they are growing up, this term redskin is not a friendly term. I mean, it's not someone doesn't call you that if they like you. That's the prelude to being beaten up. And for people who live in Washington, D.C., and there have no Native people around them, I mean, one of the arguments that Dan Snyder's lawyers made was that, well, you know, here in D.C., redskin only means a football player. Well, the reason why it only means a football player is because of genocide. All the Indian people were killed. So for them, they don't understand what Native people go through because they don't know any Native people. And there are very few of them around.
Chief Billy Tyack of the Piscataway Nation in Maryland that held a longstanding protest outside of the stadium would probably take issue with the claim that there are no Native Americans in the D.C. area.
Yeah, I've known Gabby, his daughter, for years, and we're good friends. But, I mean, to the larger public, it's not the same as having a major reservation, you know, like with hundreds of thousands of Native people next door. You know, it's what the Tyacks are going through is totally emblematic of the history of genocide. For the average D.C. person, it doesn't have that same impact. It's actually living next to an extant nation, indigenous nation, which were decimated and driven away.
Now the name has been deemed to be a derogatory slur by the trademark office in Washington, D.C., that's canceled the Redskins name. And Dan Snyder, I guess, is going to have to take it to the next level. What do you think that's going to be?
Well, I think they're going to try to find another way to... they're going to appeal, definitely. They're going to appeal the trademark decision. And they're also going to continue to try to rely on their fan base to hold a recalcitrant position. I think that all we can do is continue the pressure. We made it very clear in our press release that we look forward to being able to cheer for the team when it has a new name. And I think that's what a team should be about. A team should be about, their mascot should bring the people together. They should make the people feel good. And right now, I think a lot of even people in D.C. are starting to feel sort of weird about the name. I mean, really, it's about creating an atmosphere where everyone is included, where their people are not made to feel like outsiders in their own, you know, in their own cultural experiences, like in sports. And that's what we want for our children. We don't want them to have to always hold themselves apart because people are, you know, dressing up as wild Indians and doing fake chants. I mean, it lets you know that you're not part of this culture.
I've been speaking with Jackie Keeler. She is the head, one of the founders of Eradicating Offensive Native Masquerade, a national group that she's actually based right here in Portland. Their website is eonm.org for Eradicating Offensive Native Masquerade. Thank you for joining us, Jackie.
Yes, thank you for having me.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
State Forest Department officials said the fire had consumed 75 acres of Hood River County forestry land 10 miles south of the city as of early this afternoon. The fire was reported early this morning at around 3:45 a.m. and reportedly moved quickly through the night. Four fire engines, one helicopter, and a bulldozer have so far been dispatched, and state forestry officials are bringing in five volunteer crews to help put out the fire. The U.S. Forest Service will also supply additional support. The cause of the fire is currently under investigation. This is Central Oregon's second forest fire of the year. The Two Bulls fire near Bend destroyed 7,000 acres earlier this month. Dry conditions remain in the region, making further fires more likely. Conservationists with the Western Environment Law Center have filed a lawsuit against the Forest Service today in an effort to prevent logging in an undeveloped stretch of forest near Crater Lake. Several Oregon conservation groups say the proposed logging, part of the Bybee timber sale, threatened the habitat of the endangered gray wolf OR7 and his newly discovered wolf pups. KBOO's Alexi Horowitz spoke with Doug Hyken of Oregon Wild for more.
To start out, I was wondering if you could explain the Western Environmental Law Center lawsuit that was filed earlier today.
Well, the Forest Service proposed a large timber sale in an area just west of Crater Lake National Park. This is a special place with pristine forest, never before logged. You can actually walk from these proposed logging areas into the national park without crossing any roads or seeing any clear cuts. So this is a very special place and not the kind of place that we think is appropriate for logging.
What is the Bybee Timber Sale and how did it come about?
The Bybee Timber Sale is a large timber sale proposed by the Forest Service to basically sell off our public forests to the highest bidder. And this is the kind of place where we think needs to be protected. If we're going to have clean water, if we're going to recover endangered species like the spotted owl and the gray wolf, if we're going to have a stable climate, these are the very forests we need to protect. These forests have never been logged before, and they're a wonderful wilderness legacy that we should be passing on to future generations.
And how does the gray wolf and the discovery of its pups factor into this issue?
Well, the Forest Service planned this entire project before they knew that OR7, or the wolf we call Journey, ever put a den in this general area. So we think that given this new information that we have the first ever wolf pups born in Western Oregon in 70 years in the vicinity of this project, that's an important reason for the Forest Service to take a step back and rethink their project and decide if this is really an appropriate place to be putting a large timber sale.
So what do you hope to see come out of this lawsuit?
Well, we really think that there are common sense ways the forest should be managing our national forest. You know, there are places that have been damaged by prior logging that the Forest Service can manage, and they can do some thinning and produce jobs and produce wood products and improve the forest. But this place has never been logged. It's not damaged, and it should stay in its current good condition. Our preferred outcome is that they choose not to log the places that have never been logged and instead focus on fixing the places that have been damaged in the past. The Forest Service needs to, you know, focus on the things that the public can really get behind. There's lots of non-controversial work that can be done on our public forests, you know, projects that restore the ecosystem, that produce jobs, that create some wood products, and won't generate litigation and controversy like this. Unfortunately, the Forest Service keeps going back, doing, you know, making some of the same mistakes they've made in the past, and hopefully in the future they won't do that anymore.
That was Doug Hyken of Oregon Wild speaking about recent efforts to halt logging and the destruction of gray wolf habitat in Oregon National Forests. For KBOO News, this is Alexi Horowitz.
Strange anomalies affecting wildlife and fish on the West Coast are continuing to expand. Many species of fish are showing up more than 3 months earlier than usual along the California coast, including yellowfin tuna and mahi-mahi. Many scientists say the unusual sightings are due to the beginnings of an unusually large El Niño weather event that raises Pacific Ocean water temperatures. Pelicans in the California region have also faced an extremely hard mating season, with 90% decline in breeding pairs and baby pelicans. Federal authorities for the second straight year have issued an unusual mortality event for sea lions on the California coast. Some marine mammal rescue centers are reporting an almost 500% increase in mortality rates for sea lions along the California coast. Scientists believe a crashing sardine population has caused the high death rate of those sea lions. Squid, oyster, and mackerel populations have also all crashed to historically low levels in the Pacific Ocean off the coast of California. Scientists have pointed to a number of possibilities, including an abnormally large El Niño event, increased acidification and toxicity of ocean water, and low-level radiation poisoning from Fukushima. Along the Oregon coast, the starfish wasting disease continues to grow, and scientists now believe that some species of starfish found only along the Oregon coast may soon become extinct. Recent testing, although inconclusive, has pointed to rising water temperatures and a possible pathogen in mussels and clams, a main food source for the starfish. Southeastern Oregon has been slow to recover from the recession. An independent analysis of one county's economy and resources suggests there are lessons to be learned from other areas of the West. Some of these other regions have prioritized protecting their federal lands and inviting people to enjoy them. The report compares Malheur County with 11 other rural counties. KBOO's Alexi Horowitz has more in collaboration with the Oregon News Service.
Southeastern Oregon could be using at least some of its stark natural beauty to attract new kinds of businesses and jobs to the area. That's the finding of a report that compares Malheur County to 11 other counties in the West with similar populations and resources. Where the counties differ is in their economies. Report author Ben Alexander with Headwaters Economics says the ones that have protected some of their public land and encouraged outdoor recreation have better bottom lines than those that do not.
Their economies on average grow faster. sustain agricultural employment better, have less economic hardship, and benefit from greater travel and tourism business activity. Those are all things that Malheur County would benefit from.
Alexander says Malheur County's economy has been sluggish, even compared to other rural areas of Oregon. For 20 years, conservation groups have pushed to protect almost 2 million acres of the Owyhee Canyon lands, but Congress hasn't acted on it. The county has more than 4.5 million acres of federal land. Alexander says one advantage of designating federal wilderness is that it brands an area, showing up on maps and attracting people who might not otherwise have noticed it. In Malheur County, he says, the outdoor amenities would have the added benefit of appealing to younger people, a dwindling demographic in this part of Oregon.
Young people are leaving because they're not seeing job opportunities. If you look in the last decade, Malheur County has lost people in net terms. Most of those have been young people. The county population is getting significantly older.
Malheur County has some wilderness study areas, and parts of the Owyhee River are protected as wild and scenic. Alexander says the report is being shared for upcoming meetings about economic development in eastern Oregon. For KBOO News, this is Alexi Horowitz.
Medical reports have been released concluding that 6 tamarin monkeys that died last month at the Oregon Zoo showed signs of stress and shock. However, the animal's cause of death remains inconclusive. The 6 monkeys were part of a group of 9 the zoo had acquired from Harvard Medical School, which arrived on May 22nd, having traveled over 3,000 miles in a van from Massachusetts to Oregon, a trip that took 50 hours. Harvard has said the transport crating for the monkeys was USDA approved and included temperature controls. The monkeys were also supplied with fresh food and water throughout their transport. All 9 were quarantined by the zoo on arrival, and 6 were found dead by a zoo worker on the afternoon of May 24th. The animals appeared to have died at roughly the same time. Zoo veterinarians who performed autopsies on the monkeys reported signs of systemic shock, but cannot definitively say what killed them. The Oregon Zoo has come under fire recently, with the zoo's director and head vet recently fired over the death of an orangutan that died in January. An investigation by the zoo found that the orangutan received substandard care and that information about his death was concealed by zoo staff. As Oregon takes the lead in questioning the safety of genetically modified foods, a forum tomorrow in Portland will look at the connections between the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, trade agreement and attempts to circumvent local and state GMO bans and labeling laws. KBOO's Paul Rowland spoke this afternoon with Elizabeth Swagger, director of the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign, which is sponsoring the event.
We are going to be doing a community forum on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a massive trade deal, and how it will impact GMOs and GMO labeling. It's going to be Thursday, tomorrow, from 7 until probably around 8:30 or 9 at the First Unitarian Church of Portland in the Elliott Chapel, the smaller chapel. It's at the corner of Southwest 12th and Salmon. Basically, what we're doing is talking about how the impact of the Trans-Pacific Partnership and free trade agreements undermines our ability to advocate for consumer right to know and basically safety of the food that we eat. So we're seeing all across the state very exciting campaigns building up to get GMO labeling on the ballot this summer. And, you know, at the same time, we've also seen some wonderful victories in Southern Oregon with banning GMO cultivation in Jackson and Josephine counties.
And, of course, Josephine County is theoretically, well, it remains to be seen how it all plays out, but the so-called Monsanto Protection Act was kind of passed in a special legislative session last year, prevents counties from passing such ordinances. And of course, it again, it'll all play out in the courts. But so there's that, and then there's this national legislation that signed recently, I believe, protecting Monsanto. So there's these things going on that are trying to inhibit local initiatives. And then there's the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is a whole other level.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Companies like Monsanto are fighting on every front in order to block these local initiatives. And at the same time, we have trade negotiators that are meeting in secret on this free trade agreement that could jeopardize and undermine all of these efforts. So the Trans-Pacific Partnership really threatens to pull the rug out from under any policies to regulate the sale, import, or cultivation of GMO foods.
So is Monsanto involved in the TPP also?
Yeah, Monsanto is involved in a couple of ways. First off, this is a highly secretive and expansive free trade agreement. It would affect almost every aspect of our lives, including the food we eat, the water that we drink, and the air that we breathe. Some activists have even said, you know, if you sleep, breathe, and eat, this is a trade deal that affects you, and I think that's really true. So it's currently being negotiated between the U.S. and 11 other countries in the Pacific Rim. We know that there are 600 corporate lobbyists that do have access to the text, while, you know, people like you and I are barred from knowing what's being negotiated on our behalf. We also know that the former lobbyist for Monsanto is now the chief U.S. negotiator for the TPP's chapters on agriculture.
And who's that?
That is Islam Sigwil. He's the chief negotiator for the TPP chapter.
Well, this is something we've covered a fair amount. We'll continue to cover. We don't have a whole lot of time. Who are some of the speakers going to be at the event tomorrow?
So we have a great lineup of speakers. We're going to hear from Julia DeGraw. She's with Food and Water Watch. Rhett Lawrence from the Oregon Sierra Club, and Madeline Elder, who was the president of Communication Workers of America, Local 7901.
And once again, the time and place for this event?
This is going to be tomorrow, Thursday, June 19th at 7 o'clock at the First Unitarian Church in the Elliott Chapel. It's downtown on the corner of Southwest 12th and Southwest Salmon.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having me on.
KBOO's Paul Rowland speaking with Elizabeth Swagger, director of the Oregon Fair Trade Commission. A California judge will move forward on a lawsuit against the grocery foods chain Whole Foods for false claims of labeling foods all natural. The alleged claim is that the use of the term all natural is deceptive due to items that contain the ingredient sodium acid pyrophosphate, or SAPP, which is a synthetic leavening agent used in muffins and other baked goods that are sold at Whole Foods. Customers who have bought any of the six Whole Foods products in question have been granted the legal right to move ahead with their lawsuit against the national grocery chain Whole Foods. A new report issued by the Oregon Employment Department says that hiring fell in May, pushing unemployment levels up slightly while underemployment fell. The jobs report, published yesterday, says employers in the state added 4,200 jobs last month, 2,000 fewer jobs than in April. Unemployment rose by 0.1% from 6.8% to 6.9%. Nationally, unemployment is at 6.3%. Underemployment has continued to fall drastically, with 43,000 fewer workers who report working part-time but want more hours since February, a decrease of 30%. This marks the lowest underemployment level the state has recorded since May of 2008. The state underemployment rate now stands at 13.6%. Nationally, that rate is 12%. Industries that fuel job growth include construction, hospitality, and retail. The group Tigered First has organized a Buy Local campaign to counter the impact of the Walmart Superstore that's scheduled to open there in August. The Superstore will be located at Southwest 72nd and Dartmouth in the so-called Tigered Triangle. For more on the campaign to buy local, KBOO's Jenka Soderberg spoke with Karen Crichton of Tigered First.
Could you tell us about your group's campaign to buy local in opposition to the Walmart that's coming into Tigered?
Yes, absolutely. Our group, Tigered First, started as the No Walmart and Tiger group. We had a focus on trying to stop the Walmart from being built, but as most cities have found, that's impossible. They usually have all their permits and things in place before we knew about it. So it is now being built. It's scheduled to open in August. There's another Walmart super, this one, and this one is a superstore. It's not just groceries. It carries everything. And there's another superstore being built approximately 8 miles down the road in Sherwood, a neighboring city. So we are looking to support our local business community by encouraging everyone to please inform themselves. Shop locally, keep your dollars local. They will take a hit from this Walmart being there. And it honestly drags down the entire community because, as I said, they rely on public assistance for their not just their employees, the a lot of the traffic improvements that are being done.
Ironically, the Oregonian editorial says that the amount of time spent by Commissioner Steve Novick and others in the divestment from Walmart, which recently passed at the Portland City Council, that energy would be better spent in fixing Portland's roads, while just next door in Tigard. I understand that money that was from local gas tax and meant to go to road repair ended up being diverted to assisting this Walmart superstore. Is that correct?
Every city has a CIP list. It's their capital improvement projects. Those are things like sidewalks and streets and crosswalks and things. And this, every city has a prioritized list of these projects. Neighborhoods in Tigard have been waiting a very long time for sidewalks. There's still areas where, you know, nice middle-class, working-class neighborhoods where kids still have to walk in a ditch to get to their school bus and things. They've been waiting a long time for sidewalks. And the now this development is being done to build the Walmart. And the gas tax fund, a lot of those improvement funds that should have gone for sidewalks probably in other areas, much of it is being spent on the area immediately around this Walmart development.
Your pledge is available on the Tigard First website. That's tigardfirst.org. It is a pledge to support Tigard's small businesses and to not shop at the Tigard Walmart that will be opening this August. Again, that website is tigardfirst.org. I've been talking with Karen Crichton. She is an organizer with Tigard First, opposing the Walmart that is on its way into the city of Tigard. Thanks for joining us today, Karen Crichton.
Thank you.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
My name's Martin Leedy. I was born in this town. I live a half a mile from where you plan on breaking ground. I've been sitting here quiet all night in my seat while you highfalutin' lawyers tell us what this town needs. Mister, let me make myself perfectly clear. We don't want another Walmart here. That land you say you're buying.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for News from the Boo with Monica Beamer and Mike Crenshaw, followed by Occupy Portland Radio at 6. At 7 o'clock, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather will be great, sunny with a high of 80 and an overnight low of 53. Today in history, in 1873, suffragist Susan B. Anthony was fined $100 for attempting to vote in the 1872 presidential election. In 1983, Sally Ride became the first American woman in space. And in 1984, 5,000 striking miners fought a similar number of police in Yorkshire during the UK mining strike.
We don't want another Walmart here. Last summer down in Dixon, you put...
It is 5:28, time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Oklahomans have been socked with a surprise from their own supposedly conservative state officials. Thousands of Sooners have been putting solar panels on their homes to save on energy costs and reduce fossil fuel pollution. Switching to solar even allows them to generate excess electricity, which they can transmit back to the grid and earn a credit on their monthly bills. To reward such common sense and socially beneficial energy innovation, the state's Republican-controlled government slapped a new fee, actually a tax, on the bills of those who convert from grid takers to grid producers in the future. This crude slap in the face came with no advance notice, no public hearings, and no legislative debate. It just appeared out of nowhere, said one local solar business owner. But this was not from nowhere. It came from a secretive corporate front group called ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. In exchange for getting millions of dollars from the Koch brothers, utilities, and other dirty energy interests, ALEC is peddling a cookie-cutter bill from state to state that stops homeowners from switching to solar by taxing the energy they produce. Alec even adds insult to the injury its coke-headed backers are doing by calling such homeowners free riders on the system. Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon, who was in on this despicable sneak attack from the start, had her ego stroked by the Koch Finance Front Group last year. Alec presented its Thomas Jefferson Freedom Award to Fallon for her, quote, record of advancing free markets and individual liberty. This is Jim Hightower saying, now we know what the Koch-Alec complex means by free markets and liberty. They mean that corporate energy interests should be free to stifle your individual liberty. Thomas Jefferson would be ashamed to have his name attached to anything that this cabal of corporate and governmental kleptocrats come up with.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Cancer rates in children living in the Fukushima prefecture have skyrocketed following the nuclear disaster at the nearby Japanese power plant. 39 months after the Fukushima power plant experienced three reactor meltdowns, thyroid cancer rates have risen 4,000% in children still living in the prefecture. Over 375,000 children under 18 years have been tested, and 48% have tested positive for thyroid abnormalities such as cysts or nodule growths. 90 children so far have tested positive for thyroid cancer in the 3 years since the meltdown occurred. Historically, Japanese cancer statistics show an average of less than one case of thyroid cancer in children every year. Thyroid cancer in children is especially virulent and often spreads and attacks the lymph nodes, lungs, liver, and bones. In related Fukushima news, the effort to contain the ongoing release of over 500 tons of radioactive water daily into the Pacific Ocean has hit another snag. TEPCO, the plant owner, has admitted that the fluids pumped through the ice wall pipes are not freezing. As designed, the ice wall was supposed to freeze the ground around the Fukushima nuclear power plant, stopping contaminated groundwater from flowing into the ocean. Emergency crews working on Fukushima believe fluctuating water levels are to blame for the failure of the ice wall to freeze the ground. The World Cup continues in Brazil this week, but although Brazilians are known for their love of soccer, protests by Brazilians have taken place in cities hosting the games. KBOO's Mike Klepfer spoke with Maria Luisa Mendoza, international relations professor at University of Rio de Janeiro and director for Brazil's Network for Social Justice and Human Rights, about the protests.
Could you talk about the effects of the World Cup on the population of Brazil?
Yes, well, the World Cup has been interesting because suddenly people in Brazil realized that it was important to organize and demand better services, better public services such as healthcare, education, transportation. So there have been lots of protests organized since last year because the way that FIFA works, FIFA is a private corporation that organizes the World Cup, but it imposes several conditions in the countries where the World Cup happens. So it imposes a certain standard for the stadium. So the Brazilian government had to build new stadiums or remodel stadiums, and that demanded millions in public funding. So I think that was something that the people in Brazil were not agreeing with. And plus, you know, the tickets are very expensive. Most Brazilians cannot afford to go to those stadiums to watch the games. So I think that is a mixed feeling. At the same time that Brazilians are happy to have people from abroad visiting the country, they like soccer, of course, but the impositions made by FIFA created a lot of animosity.
Where have protests taken place so far?
Oh, all over the country, especially in the cities that are hosting the games. So around the stadiums, people have been organized.
Can you talk about economic inequality in Brazil?
Yes, Brazil is a country where we have a very large difference between the rich and the poor. That is a high level of wealth concentration in Brazil. So you have a small elite that controls most of the wealth, most of the land in Brazil, and you know, the majority of people still live in poor conditions. There have been economic improvements in the last years with the Workers' Party government, but it's still there is a lot of demands around better housing condition, better health care conditions, public education, all kinds of public services that are still not available for most people.
Are these protests that are going on in Brazil any sort of continuation of the Passe Livre protests that happened last year?
Exactly, yeah. The demands are very much the same since last year. And the protests last year happened during the Confederations Cup. There were also around the games and the stadiums at that time and against the way FIFA was privatizing the way people liked soccer in Brazil. So, you know, FIFA imposed, for instance, that only certain sponsors can sell food around the stadiums. It doesn't even, the games don't even benefit local vendors around the stadium. So it's not really good for the local economy. So last year, people were upset because the cost of living was very high, and in several cities, the local governments were trying to raise the cost of transportation.
What do you suggest that the government could do to improve conditions?
Brazil still needs to do land reform, improve the quality of food production, promote the internal market for basic things like food. You know, about one-third of Brazilians don't even have access to food on a regular basis. And improving the housing conditions, health care, all, you know, basic human rights.
Well, Professor Mendonça, I want to thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you so much.
That was KBOO's Mike Klepfer speaking with Professor Maria Luisa Mendonça about protests which have taken place at the World Cup in Brazil. In Nigeria, a bomb packed into a tricycle taxi detonated last night at an outdoor World Cup viewing event, killing 14 people. The bombing occurred in Damaturu, capital of Yobe State in northern Nigeria, and reportedly injured 26 others. The bombing has not been claimed by any group, but Nigerian officials suspect Boko Haram, the radical Islamic organization responsible for thousands of deaths in terrorist attacks and the kidnapping of nearly 300 schoolgirls in April. The attacks come days after Boko Haram gunmen attacked a town in coastal Nigeria, killing 48. Boko Haram targeted World Cup viewings in Uganda in 2010 in attacks that killed 74 people, and in neighboring African states had warned that this year could bring the same. The Nigerian government has engaged in periodic crackdowns aimed against Boko Haram in the country's northeast, which have killed hundreds, including civilians. They've been slow to confront Boko Haram over the missing schoolgirls, which has caused international consternation. Dozens of migrants are missing, and three are dead after a boat carrying them towards Malaysia capsized yesterday. 97 migrants were reportedly aboard the vessel, which capsized at 1 a.m. local time in the Strait of Malacca off the country's western coast. The boat had apparently come from Malaysia's Kerry Island, an oil palm plantation region, and was carrying Indonesian migrants exclusively. The boat was reportedly in poor condition and not seaworthy, according to officials. 60 people have been rescued by Malaysian authorities, who are attempting to find more by boat and helicopter. Malaysia, currently one of Asia's strongest economies, is home to 2 million undocumented migrants. In the latest news from U.S.-occupied Afghanistan, Afghan President candidate Abdullah Abdullah has announced that he is protesting the election, accusing Afghan President Hamid Karzai of tampering with the results of the recent presidential runoff. Abdullah has called on the country's electoral commission to cease counting and has withdrawn his own observers from the process. There's been no response from Abdullah's opponent, Ashraf Ghani. Claims of electoral fraud stem from an Afghan Electoral Commission report that said voter turnout was 7 million, a figure considered too high based on reports from polling stations. Abdullah's protest would further stall an election in which the winning candidate would immediately work with the U.S. on a status of forces agreement meant to keep U.S. troops in Afghanistan past a projected pullout at the end of this year. And thousands of refugees from northwest Pakistan have fled to Afghanistan in response to a Pakistani military offensive against Taliban insurgents. Afghan officials said 2,000 people crossed the border from North Waziristan on Tuesday. And now in the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine. As the army continues its invasion and arrests in different parts of the West Bank and occupied Jerusalem, at least 64 Palestinians were abducted this morning in pre-dawn raids. These included 51 former prisoners who had been released under the Shalit prisoner swap deal. The Palestinians were kidnapped by numerous invasions carried out in various Palestinian communities, including Hebron, Bethlehem, Ramallah, Jenin, and Qalqilia. Media sources says Israel also announced that it plans to transfer 40 prisoners who had been released under the swap deal, that they will be transferred to the Gaza Strip. The latest arrests bring the number of Palestinians abducted since last Thursday night to more than 260. The Israeli escalation began after the disappearance of three Israeli settlers from the Hebron region last Thursday night. One of the settlers who disappeared is a 19-year-old Israeli soldier, and the other two are 16-year-olds living with their families on illegally seized Palestinian land. The Israeli government has blamed Hamas for abducting the settlers, but Hamas has denied that claim. No Palestinian group has claimed responsibility for the disappearance of the three settlers. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Maddie, Alexi Horowitz, Paul Roland, and Don Zur. The producer is Mike Klepfer. Our engineer is Ian Westmoreland. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. If you would like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard about on the news tonight, here are their phone numbers, so grab something to write with. The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386. And Oregon Governor John Kitzhaber is at 503-378-3111. And Portland Mayor Charlie Hales can be reached at 503-823-4120. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR in Hood River at 91.9 FM. I'm Brian Pritchett. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO News, or rather just on KBOO, at 7 o'clock is Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 o'clock, Joanne Hardesty hosts Voices from the Edge Talk Radio, progressive talk radio from a grassroots perspective. At 9 o'clock on Press Watch with Teresa, the excuse for the latest murder fest in Iraq will rest atop a tower of lies. Also, what's happening to sea life on the West Coast, and more news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Per Fogering interviews Raed Jarar, Iraqi-American blogger and political advocate, about the critical situation in Iraq and the greater region. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 o'clock, on Between the Covers, host Ken Jones talks with Portland-based author Jason Beam about his first novel, Southbound. The book follows a recovering gambling addict. Thank you for listening to KBOO Radio, and thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a KBOO member, you can become one right now by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Have a great evening.
Thank you. you for joining us here at News from the Boo, our weekly interview, check-in, and discussion with station co-managers Monica Beamer and Mike Crenshaw.
Hey.
Hey, what's up?
And my name is Erin Yankee. I will be the fill-in host for today. So KBOO just went through quite a few co-sponsorships and parades and things that we have been promoting for a long time. Yeah. Let's go through some of those events and get a report back and see how they went.
All right. One event we had was Saturday the 14th at PSU in the Smith Memorial Center in that building on the bottom floor, and it was called Free 'Em All. And it was a benefit to support political prisoners and their families, specifically Robert Seth Hayes and Sundiata Okoli. So we had Dave Rovics, Mike Crenshaw, Ajam Umi in the building, emceeing and providing live music, and a wonderful crowd that came to this KBOO co-sponsored event. And we passed the hat. We had a little bit of lecture, and we definitely had some live musical entertainment. And we raised money for these two political prisoners who've been behind bars for some time to support people's families while they can't get out.
It was a great event.
Yeah, Dave Rovics played, and this is a song he recently sent over called Asada, and it's about the story of Asada Shakur, who was in the Black Liberation Army. She was also a Black Panther, and she was wrongfully imprisoned for the murder. She was framed for the murder of a police officer in New Jersey and subsequently broke out of prison and fled to Cuba and lives there to this day free. So long live Asada, and enjoy the song.
Special Agent Ford got on TV to put a price on someone's head. $2 million, bring her back alive or dead. On the very anniversary of the killing of Osama, in the endless war on terror, the next victim of Obama. Enemy number one of those who brought us COINTELPRO. It's the FBI's most wanted, a real live cop show. It's not enough to kill them or have them jailed. Old and gray, you have to double the bounty for the one that got away. But if Asada is a terrorist, what does that make you? She was born in Alabama in an apartheid state. Ended up north where she found another shade of hate. Terrorized by racism in the schools and in the street. Terrorized by policemen for giving children food to eat. Terrorized by agents sent to disrupt and kill on sight. Terrorized for daring to stand her ground and fight. They tried to frame her for whatever, take your pick. Finally they found something and they managed to make it stick. But if Asada is a terrorist, what does that make you? One racist cop was dead, Asada's hands were in the air. She didn't fire a shot. The all-white jury didn't care. They tortured her in prison, years alone in a basement cell. Her comrades liberated her, broke her out of solitary hell. For years they tried to find her, but in 1984 she made her way to Havana, found asylum on the Cuban shore, and they terrorized the Cuban people, tried to bring them to their knees. But despite the terror of the empire, the so-called terrorist is free. And if Asada is a terrorist, what does that make you? If Asada is a terrorist, what does that make you?
First weekend in June, we had two great events. One was Voices on the Ground. It was a Portland State University School of Social Work, actually, Social Welfare Alliance sponsored event, which is the radical social workers working to be a part of the broad change that we need. That was very exciting. We had Sherry Honkala from Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign and Kensington Welfare Rights Union came in, and Paul Bowden from Western Regional Advocacy Project, and then just lots of folks from the community talking about what it means to be a social worker in this day and age, and to to make sure that we're doing the best we can to make the change that's needed and work on systemic change that an oppression that is creating poverty, mass poverty. Mike and I were on a panel with Sherry and Paul on Saturday with all of the folks there. It was about 100, 150 social workers there, so that was pretty exciting.
Nice.
That same Friday night, we had Pitch a Tent, sponsored by our good friends at Right to Survive. I think it's maybe the fourth annual.
And Right to Dream 2.
Right to Dream 2, Right to Survive. And that was a great event that happens every year around the Rose Festival. It highlights the inequity and the criminalization of people who are poor and fights that. We highlighted the Homeless Bill of Rights campaigns that are happening across the country and the criminalization of people who are poor. For example, people getting tickets for sleeping. And this is a great event because it shows that during festivals, people who are housed can come down and sleep and not get ticketed. But people who actually do not have homes and have nowhere else to sleep will be ticketed for sleeping. Basic human needs, among other things folks are ticketed for just for being poor or homeless. So the houseless community did a great job. Mike saying that we filled, I think we had about 150 tents and filled, I'm not sure how many blocks, but it's been a growing event and lots of great community. Food Not Bombs brought food. There's just lots of great groups.
Yeah, these events are a great way for KBOO to interact with the community and support different things that are happening in the community for everyday people. You know, it's a great way for volunteers to also support the work that KBOO does and work that's happening in the community. So I want to thank the volunteers that came down and tabled at the events to get people to become members of KBOO and renew their memberships.
Yeah.
And thank you to the public for coming out. And by all means, continue to support events that we do have. KBOO actually has a few upcoming events that you should all come support if you can. There's the Wet the Festival. That's this Friday, 2014, all day. And it goes through Monday, June 23rd, and that's all day, taking place at Wolf Run Ranch in Dufour, Oregon, located south of the Dalles, just under 2 hours drive from Portland. The festival is oriented on electronic music, and the organizers tout all kinds of amenities like a hookah lounge, relaxation huts, the largest disco ball on the West Coast, yeah, and a huge wading pool for you to splash in. So come on out to that.
Stories from the Streets, a Northwest hip-hop celebration for the homeless youth. It's take place Friday, noon to 9 p.m. Stories from the Streets is a groundbreaking celebration at Pioneer Square in Portland, Oregon, dedicated to exploring the life of hip-hop in the Pacific Northwest. This event is also to raise awareness on the positive influences and lifelong benefits that the hip-hop culture has had on our homeless youth and our community.
Yeah, big shout out to Talilo Marfil from New Avenues for Youth, who's producing that event. And they're going to have this theme of earth, air, fire, water. And they're going to have graffiti, breakdancing, DJing, and rapping, all the elements of hip-hop to support these kind of elements in that theme. So that'll be great. We'll
see you down there. Is this the first annual?
This is the first of what we hope will become an annual event. Cool. It's all ages and it's free, so bring the family.
It's great to support the youth.
Talilo was part of an outside-in project that we did with the Youth Collective with a radio intensive. And so,
all right.
So now we have this song that he recorded during part of that radio intensive, and then we'll get back to some current events.
Word.
I think it's just pointless to get shot over a stupid color. Red, blue, green. It's all the same. Just a color.
Just stop. There's that no point of killing back people over the people. You know? Or you have to invest in the people.
There's so much help out there, but still, some people still pull the trigger.
The despair that people have.
And if you ever think of violating the law,
check it in, check.
Enough,
check.
About losing liberty.
Enough is not. Nothing is worth the loss of
your life. Go like this, yeah, check it.
I see the corruption, and I'm thinking about it when I'm looking up on the streets, and I'm feeling the bleed. I'm seeing everybody claiming that they want to be the one to break up every single thing of the reach, and they be saying that I'll never be free. But take a heat of principality, these authorities. So whenever this guy to put a blocker on the elevation, I don't wanna pass like the homie you're letting, I wanna fly. So why do I follow the rules when I can do what I wanna do? Rather be a free food or following all of you, yep. Reckless, rebounding just like a felon. I'm telling everybody to quit telling me what to do. So I'm left to see the cast to be everything I wanted. I be on it like a prodigy. Tap it over to my beat, I was stopping the rhythm when I cut it. Now what do you call it again? STDs, but I thought it was free though. Automatic when I'm rubbing the hit, I'm throwing these blows. Gotta be more than knocking hoes and popping foes. We're stuck up in a mind of blows, but I blow the E, the black, the weed. That's numbing and dumbing and killing and stepping the power out of the hour. The mentality's gotta be thinking they're living and giving. I might do a prison, this rhythm and the beat setting me free. And I'm getting to know they're living like I'm in a world all alone on my own. Isn't what I wanna be somebody synchronized with a heavenly melody going fast, but I'm hag now with adrenaline. I'm a competitive element, but I gotta settle with sediment with a set of the venom in the body of men and men. Including me, so father forgive me for everything I did.
It's the root of all our problems as a people, man. It all comes from within yourself, really, man. You gotta have the determination to stop in order to get there, man.
And not produce nothing in life.
It would be really helpful if people had equal opportunities. If everybody could go to college, for example.
We also have an evening with Wisdom of the Elders. That's Friday. A lot's going on Friday. That's Friday the 20th, 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. And this event includes a salmon dinner, cultural arts presentations, and silent auction. Wisdom of the Elders Incorporated is committed to its mission of Native American cultural sustainability, multimedia education, and race reconciliation. We record, preserve, and share oral history, cultural arts, and traditional ecological knowledge of exemplary Indigenous elders, storytellers, and scientists in collaboration with diverse cultural organizations and educational institutions. Again, that's an evening with Wisdom of the Elders that'll take place at the Melody Ballroom, 614 Southeast Alder Street in Portland.
And June 27th through the 29th, we'll be at Good in the Hood Celebration with a booth, remote broadcast, and more. Marching in the parade. Stay tuned for when and where. At Lillis Albina Park, Harriet Tubman Middle School at North Flint and North Russell Streets. So we hope that you can join us there.
Yeah, and if you want to march in the parade with Kabu and make a lot of noise and be seen, I heard there might be some goodies to toss out to the kids in the neighborhood. You should show up at about 9:30 a.m. at Lillis Albina Park / Harriet Tubman Middle School.
Saturday the 28th is the parade to march with Kabu and all the folks there.
KBOO is proud once again to co-sponsor and provide the community a live broadcast of the 27th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, a benefit for the Oregon Food Bank. The festival will take place July 3rd through 6th, 2014, and will feature Greg Allman, Los Lobos, Los Lonely Boys, Maceo Parker, Lee Fields and the Expressions, and John Nemeth and the Bow Keys, among 100-plus other acts that will perform over the four-day festival. Like last year, KBOO's broadcasts will be simulcast all over the state on member stations of Oregon Community Media. OCM, Oregon Community Media, is open to community licenses to provide support and assistance in the development of local non-commercial media in order to support and nurture strong independent stations throughout Oregon. The festival takes place in Tom McCall Waterfront Park. For more info on these and all KBOO sponsored events, go to KBOO.fm and scroll down on the right-hand side to community events.
This is all the stuff that's going on outside of the station that we're co-sponsoring and participating in and bringing community together. Is there anything people need to know about currently that's going on inside the station?
Well, we just continue to, you know, work where Mike and I are still building relationships and figuring out what structure and supports we can bring, and just doing our best to learn what's been happening and respect the history, super important, and to learn all the folks and build relationships. You know, management can be kind of a boring topic, but it's also really important. So we'll be talking more and more about what's happening. We're doing strategic planning and budgeting coming up, and so we'll be talking a bit about that.
That's further news from the booze.
Yes.
In the future. And I want to say thank you to Kismet. She came down here and rocked the house the other day. One of the wonderful things that happens at KBOO while we're in our offices, typing on our computers and sitting in our meetings, is we hear some of the best live music that Portland has to offer. And you don't necessarily realize it's live. You hear it over the speakers, over the PA, and then you walk back and you look in Studio One and you see that people are actually making this music on the spot. And so I met one of the artists, Kismet, and I want to encourage artists that are in love with their craft to get in touch with KBOO and figure out how to get down here and record live and play live and get your music on the air. You know, let the people hear it.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for taking another Wednesday evening moment with us.
Yep.
Next week, it'll happen again. This has been Erin Yankee for News from the Boo.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Right now, for those who don't know what Astral Chapin is,
jazz, soul, funk, rare grooves, breaks, beats, world music, hand-picked music,
hosted by DJ Cecily.
Sunday nights
at 6:30 p.m.
KBOO Radio, Portland, Oregon.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual Evening with Wisdom of the Elders, Friday, June 20th from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. A night with Wisdom of the Elders takes place at the Melody Ballroom, 614 Southeast Alder Street in Portland. It includes a salmon dinner and a silent auction, as well as speeches and a cultural arts presentation. Again, that's a night with Wisdom of the Elders, Friday, June 20th at 6:30 p.m. at the Melody Ballroom in Portland. More information about this event may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
June 20th, 2014, Stories from the Streets is a groundbreaking celebration at Pioneer Square in Portland, Oregon, dedicated to exploring the life of hip-hop in the Pacific Northwest.